Blog Talk Radio.
Folks, how's everybody doing out there? Tonight's topic, it's going to be a good one, man. We got Brother Dennis on the phone, Captain Dennis Muhammad on the phone. We're going to have a great time with Sister Gidget Muhammad. You guys sit back and relax, enjoy the show. If anybody has any questions, just push one on your keypad, and I'll see it. I acknowledge you at that time. Save your questions for later on, guys, and we're going to have a great show. Let's get it started, Sister Gidget. Sister Gidget, are you there? Okay. Brother Dennis, are you there?
Assalamu alaikum, Brother DJ Black Caesar. How are you?
Wow, what happened to you, lady?
You know what? I forgot to take my phone off of mute. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, everybody does that. Hey, guys, check it out. If you don't mind, make sure you get ready to talk online. Make sure you can turn your phones off mute because I will have everybody on mute right now, so you don't have to worry about that. But if you turn your phone on, once you get a question, if you have a question, put your phone on mute until I ask you get ready to talk and then unmute it. Okay, Sister Gidget, it's your show, baby. What's up?
Well, assalamu alaikum to you. How are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful, man. Blessed by the Allah.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Captain Dennis Muhammad. How are you, sir?
Well, alaikum salam. I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking, sister.
Well, and thank you, Brother Captain Dennis, for being on the show tonight. I just want to let you know that I am so honored because you have been a long-term soldier in this battle, and I remember you from way back when. I put it like that. So you've been on this road a long time, so I'm very honored, sir, and I thank you for your servitude in the nation. Before we start, I want to read from the book of Matthew because this is going to be the centerpiece of our topic tonight. And I'm going to read from Matthew 9 and 10. And it said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And so, Brother Captain Dennis, you know, when I read those words and I thought about you and your mission today, you know, it rings so realistic now. It's like we're actually in that time, and we know that the Bible and the Quran are written in allegorical time, so a lot of things that we think are the past is actually the future and actually occurring right now. So, Brother Captain Dennis, if you would, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your mission.
Well, my name is Brother Dennis Muhammad. I am a member of the Nation of Islam, has been a member of the Nation of Islam for over 40 years. I've been personal security for the Honorable Minister Farrakhan for at least 33 of those years. I am the founder of the Peacekeepers Global Initiative, an initiative that I started about 3 years ago, coming out of the spirit of the Million Man March. I was blessed to be a part of the Million Man March and help to be part of the organizing and the logistics of such an historic event. One of the things that fascinated me about such an historic event was how the minister had called 1 million and 2 million showed up, and the minister asked those 2 million men to take a pledge. And one of the pledges was to go back and to not commit no harm or violence on someone else or self, unless it was in self-defense, and that he also mentioned that we go back and make our communities a decent and safe place to live. Well, when the men took that pledge 16 years ago, these men went back to every major city in America, and crime dropped in every major city in America, which really let us know that when black men put it up in their mind to do something, that we have the power to bring peace in our community. So 16 years later, crime and violence is really historically on the rise. There have never been the kind of gun violence and black-on-black killing that we have ever seen in history. And so we just got together and decided to call those 2 million men back to active duty. And I went around the country and I named it the Peacekeepers. And it was very interesting why I named it the Peacekeepers, because I did not want to name it making an organization. The Peacekeepers Global Initiative is not an organization. is what it is. It's an initiative. It's an action plan. And that was really by design, because I'm tired of all these organizations. So when I named it the Peacekeepers, it was because I thought about the United Nations Peacekeepers, that they go into a country that is at civil war, meaning fighting itself, and bring some stability to that country until a peace resolution is brought about. So I realize that we are at war with ourselves. I think the black community is at civil war, black folks killing black folks. And I thought that we need to have something like the Peacekeepers, the United Nations Peacekeepers, where we don't have to argue about whether we Muslims, whether we Christians, whether we white, whether we black, whether we rich or whether we poor. We're Peacekeepers. So the Peacekeepers Global Initiative is the only initiative where we found out that peace transcends religion, it transcends color, and it transcends politics. So you could be a Christian peacekeeper, a Muslim peacekeeper, a white peacekeeper, a Hispanic peacekeeper, and we believe that everybody can keep their own affiliation in the organization, but they're a peacekeeper, and that we come together for one common purpose, and that is to bring peace and stabilize a community that's in total chaos. So I'm very proud to not only be the founder of such a great initiative, but we now have 19 chapters in America and one chapter in London, England.
All praises due to Allah. Yes, sir. And, you know, Brother Captain Dennis, you mentioned the kind of like the death rate of us and how we are at civil war with one another. I did a previous show where I shared the statistics that 93% of the black men in America that are murdered by other black men. And, you know, that is a sad, sad factor in our community. And I'm going to read from Proverbs, because this is going to speak to what we're talking about. When it says that there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end in the way is death. And so I'm saying to you is that over the years, and of course, I share that, you know, that joy with you for the Million Man March. I was vice president of the local organizing committee in the Southwest region with Minister Robert Muhammad. And I remember seeing that beautiful sea of black men. And I remember coming back doing the works after the Million Man March. And so now I'm at a pace where I'm like, okay, what happened? You know, and the killing is astronomical. So I'm asking you, Brother Dennis, that when you started this initiative, how did you begin? When you went out there into the community, I mean, how did you start?
Well, you know, one of the things that was really on my side was that I have been under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Farrakhan for 33 years. He's been my principal leader, my principal guide, and my principal teacher. And I've been able to be blessed to watch how the minister has maneuvered himself into the hearts and the minds of many of our people who have been sometimes affected by the misrepresentation or the false or the lies that have been said about the minister. No matter how they try to paint him in that ugly light, he has been successful in winning our people over, and even some of his enemies. So I tried to move the same way and follow what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, what you see him do, you do. And I tried to the best of my ability. So it wasn't hard, sister, because Brother Dennis had somewhat a reputation because, number one, I was former East Coast regional captain, so everybody knew me on the Eastern Seaboard. Number two, because I'm the personal security administrator, everybody know me in the nation. And number three, we have built a relationship with some of the celebrities, especially a man that I secure, Russell Simmons. So a lot of the celebrities and entertainers know me. So I use the gift of God had given me to draw attention. And when I started the Peacekeepers Global Initiative, it was like any other thing. It was under duress. It was under a crisis. We were invited by Minister Willie in New Orleans about 3 years ago to address a concern that what really happened. I was invited after a black man slit the throat of his three-year-old son with a box cutter because he didn't want to pay child support. I just thought that we had reached an all-time low. And so I was the keynote speaker in New Orleans, and it was that moment that I started my first chapter in New Orleans to get the peacekeepers started, and we began to start organizing, getting men to accept the responsibility to give 1 hour of their time to be present for peace. So we call it the 1 hour power. I knew, sister, that if you're going to get black men particularly who have been really destroyed with lack of love and lack of unity, we're going to work together. We had to find something that was attainable. We needed a goal that was reachable. So if I was to say to these brothers, hey, let's patrol the streets every day for 1 hour, I would have lost them. If I said 2 days, 2 hours a day, I would have lost. So I made it very simple. I said, can you give me 60 minutes of your time a week? 1 hour, not 1 hour a day, 1 hour a week. I made it so simple that a man can't give up 1 hour of his weekly time to make the community safe for the women, children, and the elderly in the community. So every man said, well, okay, I could give 1 hour. But I knew that crime is 24/7. So people would say to me, Mr. Muhammad, how is it that 1 hour is going to be effective when crime is 24/7? And I would always say, and I coined the phrase, is that 1 hour of doing something is better than 24 hours of doing nothing. And men seen that understanding, and they began to start saying, he has a point. So what happened when we started it for 1 hour, it was hard for men not to show up to be present for peace. But in some cities, 1 hour became two, two became three, and that was the whole purpose, is to make sure that one day it would be 24/7.
Wow. Yes, sir. And, you know, you told me about all those things that you're known for, but also what always stuck out to me, Brother Captain Dennis, is that mustache. Hey, you know for that one, too. So you have a very distinguished mustache. I'm serious. And you know, wow, I'm just still shaking about the man cutting the baby's throat because he didn't want to pay child support. That is an all-time low. So, Brother Captain, when we're out there in the streets, when the peacekeepers are out in the community, who are you talking to, and what are you talking to them about?
That's a very good question. One of the things, dear sister, that I knew, that if we were going to go out there, and it's because of my training as a captain, I know that you never send people out in any area unfamiliar, hostile, without training them. We would never send the Fruit of Islam. Every soldier that comes through the ranks, he get training that's called FOI training, even before we put a paper in his hand and send him into the community. So I wasn't going to do the same way with our non-Muslim family, our Christian family, men and women who never been out there on the street corners. They perceive our young people as thugs and killers. So why? I couldn't put them out there. So first thing I would do, sister, I would give them a 6 weeks training. Before I even get them in the streets, I would give them training in the areas of CPR and first aid. Every peacekeeper is trained in CPR and first aid. Why? We believe, dear sister, it's better to know it and not have to use it than have to use it and not know it. We need to teach our people life-saving skills. God forbid that any time the peacekeepers are out there and something happened, each peacekeeper is trained enough to be able to stabilize this human being until help comes. And then the second piece of the training was to teach the peacekeepers self-defense. Every man believes he knows how to fight. If you ask average brother, he could tell you he believes he knows how to fight. But he ain't turning down no training on how to fight. So we teach them not no kicks. We just teach them basics, how to get in out of a hold and how to put somebody in the hold. We teach them basic things of how to subdue someone if you have to subdue. Basic self-defeat techniques, self-defense techniques, and we also teach our women. And, of course, with always that one individual in every group that he just wanted to run and go get help. You didn't even know that was an art. He had to teach a man how to run and go get help. All we ask the brother is just come back. That's all we ask. If you go get help, please just come back. But we teach them self-defense, CPR, first aid, but the hallmark, the third part of the training is what has been the hallmark of the Nation of Islam FOI training, and it's called the proper handling of people. Why have we, sister, been very successful in going into the worst communities throughout America? Back in the late 80s, early 90s, we went into Mayfair Mansion. We went into some of the most crime-ridden areas, and how were we able to subdue to there? It's because the FOI have people skills. We go into a community not acting like we the police. We don't go and try to police our people. We go in there with love and kindness, and that was the key to making the success of the peace. I would definitely tell all of the peacekeepers, listen, we're not going on these corners to tell these young brothers, pull your pants up. We're not going on these corners to tell these young brothers, we take them back to corner. We're not going on these corners to tell these young brothers what they should do and what they shouldn't do. That is not the philosophy of the peacekeepers. We go and show these young people love and kindness. We believe, like Jesus said in the Bible, with love and kindness I draw thee. We believe with love and kindness we can draw our young people to a better way of life. That is the peacekeeper's way. If any peacekeeper want to go out there and act like they the police, you're not a peacekeeper. Be a police officer. We go out there and show love. Now, what has it done? When we go out there on that corner, you see 50 men in orange shirts that say, peacekeepers, I'm present for peace, 100 men. That's impressive. If you see 50 men walking toward you in orange shirts, you don't know we come to beat you down. You don't know what it is. But as soon as you read the shirt, on the front of the shirt it says, I am present for peace. It takes away the confrontational mind that young man may have about our motive. So we have disarmed him just with a saying, hey, man, I'm not here to start no problem with you, brother. I'm not here to argue with you, brother. I'm here present for peace. And then we put that smile on that young man. Hey, man, how you doing, brother? My name is Brother Dennis. I'm a peacekeeper. Oh, the reason why we out here, brothers, for 1 hour, we just want to make it safe for our women, our children, our elders. You can appreciate that, can't you, young brother? Don't you want to see the street safe for your grandmother and your mother? And they say yes. Then we say, thank you, brother. Why don't you join us? Sometimes they will. Sometimes they say, okay. And they walk away. But nevertheless, it's never confrontational. And then sometimes they would ask us, hey, man, y'all giving jobs? Oh, we say, yes, sir, brother. You know, we got a brother who's a peacekeeper who just opened up a tire shop. Mr. So-and-so, this young man is looking for a job. Are you hiring at the tire shop? Mr. So-and-so say, brother, you got any skills in putting on tires? Yeah, I know how to steal them and take them off. I mean, I know how to take them off. All right, brother. You know, just show up come Monday morning. Come show up Monday morning, and we'll put you to work. The bottom line is, sister, we begin to engage and meet our people where they are. Our young people are not in the mosque. Our young people are not in the church. Our young people don't go to town hall meetings. Our young people don't attend the conference. Our young people's on the basketball courts. They're in the projects. They're on the corner. They're in the recreation centers. We meet our young people where they are. And when we get out there, we just engage in some loving conversation and sister over a protracted period of time. I mean, over 6 months, over a year. You keep going back in that same community, saying that same thing. Eventually, we win them over. And eventually, some of them even wind up joining the nation.
Wow. Wow. That's a magnificent work, Brother Dennis. Wow, that's amazing. I commend you for your effort and all that energy. And I know you're all over the globe with that. Let me ask you this, though. As you venture into these various communities all over the country, what are you finding that is the strongest influence of violence in our community?
Well, you know, sister, there's a videotape, a DVD that's going out. It's called Hidden Colors. I don't know if people are checking it out. It's an awesome DVD. It is made up of some of our great black scholars, our great social scientists. You got Dr. Frances Welsing. You got Dr. Omar Johnson. You have Sharada Ali. You have some very great people who gives a historical, a intellectual and background on what creates, why we're doing what we're doing. And one of the things that was fascinating about Dr. Omar Johnson's statement, look what Dr. Omar Johnson said. He says, the mother and father that gives birth to violence and crime is lack of jobs and lack of education. Now, he said this. He said, the mother and the father, he didn't say the uncle, the cousins, the nieces, and the nephew. He said the two things that give birth to it is lack of jobs and lack of education. Well, if you any kind of social scholar or scientist and you want to fight crime and violence, then we should stay right there. We should say, well, the social conditions that give rise to it is lack of jobs and lack of education. Well, there's many other reasons, but he said these are the two principal. Well, if they are the two principal reasons that crime and violence is on the rise is due to lack of education and lack of jobs, then it seems to be smart that why don't we solve that by getting education and fostering education and giving jobs. But however, under these economic times, under a system that its educational system has completely failed, and you're giving our children, our youth, an inferior knowledge, it would never be able to raise our young people out of the state of ignominy that they're in, the state of ignorance that they're in. We need a superior knowledge that would take them to the next level, and that superior knowledge can only be found by the teachings of Mr. Elijah Muhammad. And if we're going to give our people jobs, then you can't depend on your slave or former slave master to give jobs, because we know right today you got people with PhD degrees and they're not working. So if you got a man with degrees not working, then what chances do a young man get have? Not only he don't have a degree, not only he don't have a high school diploma, but then he got a felony record. So what chances is he getting a job? So we are in what you call a catch-22. So we cannot look for them to employ us. So Mr. Muhammad said we have to create jobs. So this means in order for us to solve this problem of crime and violence, we're going to have to get some of our best minds together and begin to discuss how we can give our young people not a knowledge, but a knowledge that has self-love in it. If you take a picture, sister, and the first thing you look, if you in the picture, you want the first person you look is yourself in the picture. You ain't going to look at everybody else. You want to see how you look. So you're going to look at you first, then you're going to look at everybody else. But if you ain't in the picture is no concern to you. Oh, it looks nice. And you hand it to the people. But if you in you're going to dwell in, you may want to take it home with you. Well, that's the same way with our young people. Our young people have to see themselves in the picture. They do not see themselves in the picture of America. They don't see themselves in the picture in the rise of their own condition, out of their own condition. So they don't care. The picture don't mean nothing to them. So we have to create an educational system where they see themselves in the picture. And once you see yourself in the picture, then you're able to contribute. Malcolm made a very profound statement. Malcolm said, if you don't believe you've done anything, then you can never feel that you're obligated to do anything. So we don't believe that we have contributed to anything, so we don't believe we have to do anything. We have to teach our people that they are the ones. That's what I like about the DVD, Hidden Colors. They go and teach the true history of our origin, how we built the pyramids, how everything we did, mathematics, and that's what I love about it. Now the job piece. We're spending, sister, everybody knows over $300 billion is running through our hands, right?
Yes, sir, every year.
Look at our entertainers and our celebrities. Look at the money that our celebrities, and look at what LeBron James get paid. Look at some of the highest paid athletes. Look at what they make. What the money that our entertainers make and our sports figures and our rappers, they got enough money to come into the black community, buy it up, and create jobs to take them little young brothers off the corner. But somebody has to be wise enough, somebody they have to respect, that can call them to the table of accountability and say, hey, man, look here, 50, you like to talk about how you come from the hood. You come from 40 Projects in Queens. Hey, Nicki Minaj, you come from Baisley Project. Hey, Jay-Z, you like to brag you come from East New York, Brownsville. But wait a minute. Look at those very cities. Look at those very boroughs and see the high crime rate. Don't you want to go back? I don't mind you buying a ball team, building a stadium. But that's buildings. That's a sport. Let's build up the hearts and the minds and the aspirations of the young people that look up to you, Jay-Z. Let's build up the hearts and the minds and aspirations of the people that look up to you, 50. Invest back in the very community and give these young people jobs, and I guarantee that it won't solve the problem 100%, but it will knock it down a nice piece.
Yeah, but, you know, that also speaks to the education, Brother Dennis, because, you know, they're not teaching us to come back and revitalize our communities, but they're teaching us how to be a slave to their industry. So education does play a part. Even they got all that money, they still don't realize that entity of it. So, yeah, it will take someone with great influence,
you know,
and Minister Farrakhan is the one for the job, trust me. Yes, sir.
When the Mr. Muhammad says, if a people would not treat you right, would you expect that same people to teach you right? White people don't have an invested interest to see us come out of this condition because our condition employs them. We are contributing to the criminal way. When they had made prisons, privatized prisons. That means if I got enough chatter, enough loot, enough money, I could buy a prison? But that's a good investment because with unemployment the way it is, sure enough people are going to commit crime. And if I bought a prison, which is a zoo, the prison ain't nothing but a zoo, then if you got to put animals in the zoo, where do you go to find animals in the zoo? You go to the jungle. That's easy. But shoot, our community is a jungle. So all you got to do, grab a couple apes, grab a couple orangutans, get some of them hyena negroes and some of them, you know. I mean, it's easy. And you fill your damn zoo. And what do you do when you go to the zoo? You take the zoo, you give them, you have some food, and you feed the animals. When you go to visit, what do? You bring them some food. You visit them. You feed the animals. If you ever look at the system is almost designed the same way. So it's not hard to build the zoo, especially when, so you're going to create the animals, you're going to create the jungle, just don't give them enough jobs and watch what they're going to do. They're going to either do two things, steal or starve. And if you look at our people and obesity on the rise, it ain't look like we're starving. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
It don't look
absolutely
like we're starving.
Not. Yes, sir. Okay, let me check the phone lines before I ask the next question. Caesar, do we have any callers on the line?
Yeah, we got a lot of callers on the line.
Okay, any questions?
Yeah. 601, I think that's Rakeem. What's up, Rakeem? 601, what's up? Okay, he must have his phone on mute. Turn your phone off mute, brother.
Okay, we can move to the next person and come back to him.
Okay.
Is there anyone else?
We have no more questions.
Okay. All right. So, Brother Captain Dennis, I want to ask you about the, you know, how do we combat the availability of weapons to these babies? Because, you know, when I grew up in Compton back in the late 60s and 70s, you know, when we did hear about violence in the community, you know, somebody got hit in the head with a baseball bat, a brick, you know, some stabbings. We had some shootings, and you know, that was sporadic. However, it seems like every time I turn around, some baby, and when I say baby, I mean, you know, whether they're 4 or 24 or whatever, is getting shot. And, you know, shot and killed, shot multiple times, you know, shot in the drive-by, shot, you know, bullet, you know, kills baby in the bed going through the window. So where in the world are all these guns coming from, and how can we get a handle on the availability of these weapons to these babies? Because somebody is responsible for bringing these weapons into the community. Our children are not going into Walmart, or they're not going into gun shows and buying weapons. Where are they coming from, and how can we stop it?
Well, sister, you know, you're not going to get rid of guns. Guns is just as much of America's apple pie. You have to understand that when they flood our community with guns, they have a plan. Their plan was give them guns and let them kill each other. Well, you know, it's like the same attitude. Let's keep crime in that community and don't be concerned about crime in that community. It's all right until crime jumps the fence. Now it's in your community. Now it's an epidemic. It's a problem. See, it's all right when we're killing one another. But now you see an armed guy goes into a movie theater and kill up a bunch of white folks. Then you see another one kill up a congressman, shoot up the congressman. Then you see all of these killings, man, with other people that don't look like us. They're just going into schools and just killing people. Now, you know, guns is on the president's agenda. Well, why do it have to take it happen to y'all that it becomes some issue that you want to deal with now? Malcolm made a very profound statement. It kind of got him in trouble. But I never understood until I got older in the nation when he says, now the chicken's coming home to roost. Well, what he was saying was America was a violent nation. And long as she was perpetuating violence against us, it was okay. But then when the president of the United States died by violence, now you are reaping what you sow. So now we're looking at the chickens coming home to roost. Now, what are you saying? So you think you're going to take guns out of the homes of our crazy folks, out of the hands of our crazy folks, who are living in the most unsafest environments in every major part of the city? We live in the most unsafest community. So you want me to disarm myself in the jungle? You want me to get rid of my gun among the savages? This is what you asking me. You make the jungle safe, then God get rid of the guns. But if you ain't going to make the jungle safe, don't come to get my gun. Most of the people, they have guns for protection. Look what the young brother said one day. He said, I would rather be caught with the gun from the police than to be caught without a gun with these niggas on the street. Excuse my language. That's how they think. I would rather be caught with a gun by the police than to be caught without the gun on the streets. This is real. So we're not going to solve it by saying, get rid of the guns, put up your guns. Now, of course, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan told us, we don't need no guns. He had ordered every Muslim under his leadership to get rid of all the firearms in our house unless we are a law enforcement agency. So every one of us had to get rid of that Lewis, had to get rid of that 20, there ain't no more 22 specials, that's old. But every one of us had to get rid of those guns that we had. And we disarmed ourselves. And so right now in the homes of most of us, every one of us Muslims who heard him, you won't find a weapon. Well, what does that do? Do that make us unsafe? No, it don't make us unsafe because we Muslims say we fear nobody but God. Where the minister's putting their faith to the test. He's putting their faith to the test. Don't say you believe in God, but then you got your gun, the other God, under your pillow, under your mattress. So what is it done? Here's what I've learned, sister, why it's so good that we don't carry weapons. Because we walk with a different attitude.
I can always tell somebody who's armed by the way they walk. There's a certain swagger somebody got when they got this guy who shot this guy Zimmerman, who shot and killed Trayvon Martin. He would have never ever approached that brother if he didn't have a gun. He would have never said that to that young brother if he didn't have a gun. But the gun he had gave him a confidence and empowered him. And this is what it does. It gives people a certain sense of power. It makes them believe that I got the power and you can't make me afraid. And if you do, I can pull this out. And you're supposed to be scared of this, and this is supposed to make you run. Well, in reality, you may not react a certain way if you didn't have a gun. You may act, you know, when I was over there, you know, the minister sent me over to London, England. I lived over in the UK. I lived over in the UK for a whole year. They got the best gun law you ever would see in the world. You don't hear about no shootings in London, England. The police don't even carry a gun. You see the police walking the streets in the UK with just a nightstick, and they don't have a gun. And you looking at them, you say, man, you know, I mean, this is crazy. But you know what? When you walk up to any one of those police officers, they call them bubbies. And when you walk up to any one of the police officers, you can't find a police officer who speaks so kind to you. These are not no disrespectful police officers like in America. When you talk to them, they talk to you with respect. So that means that because they give respect, you give back respect. And so they don't have the problems that these police officers in America have. And that's why they don't have the problems of guns. Now, they got knife killings. They have an increase of knife killings like we have gun killings. Their knife killings is just as high in the community as gun killings is in America. But you don't have the problem with the gun law. So I believe what the minister did to us, he was teaching us, man, listen, use your people skills. Because if I get angry and I ain't got nothing to just pull out my pocket and pow, 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 how many people you believe has shot and killed somebody that they didn't really mean to kill, but they did it out of anger? How many young guys wasn't intending to shoot the innocent person, but because they ain't on no shooting range, they don't know how to shoot, they watching TV that you see somebody shoot a gun sideways? Man, that's crazy. Have you ever seen the police at the academy shoot a gun sideways? This is the madness of our young people. And they don't know. And they hitting everything but the right thing, but the thing they trying to hit. So, sister, if we really, really going to get rid of that, we got to address it from a very intellectual, intelligent position. Yes, we got to get rid of the guns. But, yes, we got to make our community safe where nobody don't need no gun. That is what we have to do. That's my position on that, sister.
So when you're out in the community, Brother Captain Dennis, and you see these young men, and I'm talking about the young men that most of the people in the community have grown to fear, the men with the, you know, the young men with the sagging pants, with the hoodies on, with the tattoos and the gold teeth and things of that nature, are we speaking to that issue with those brothers, or are we just not assuming that they're packing? You know, are we addressing that issue in the community?
Well, you know what, sister, to be honest with you, you know, them brothers are some beautiful men, to be honest with you.
Yes, sir.
They may look crazy. They may talk crazy. You know, that's the look you have to have in the jungle. That's a jungle look. You don't never see nobody walking in a hostile environment with a smile on their face. Hey, you got to put the grin on because you don't know who want to test you. You may be scared as all outdoors, but I tell you what, I'm going to put my mean mug on. I'm going to put my screw face on. That's protection. And they're doing that. They ain't got nothing else going for them. They put that hood on. You could take a little seven-year-old man, turn his hat backwards, put a hoodie on, you'd be scared of him. You'll be scared of him until you pull it back and say, man, that's a damn baby. That's how we, you know, we just have got to that level. But, you know, our young people, man, are beautiful. These brothers that you call thugs, I was with the minister in Chicago, Illinois, man. We walking down one of the worst streets of Chicago, and these young brothers all lined up in the white tees, you know. And if you look at them, they look intimidating. But, man, as soon as the minister went over to talk to them, they smiled. They had beautiful smiles. They was respectful. They looked like they melted like butter, man. And you like, oh, man, this dude's a beautiful dude, man. Wow, man, I thought you was a straight killer. Well, he may have been a killer. But they only have to do that to survive. But the minister brought the beautiful side out of him. So I've learned there's a beautiful side to our, we can't be afraid of our own babies. There's some fools
right.
out there. I grant it. There are some fools out there. But you know what? They're so less in numbers. So less in numbers. And everybody know who the fool is. But even a fool got enough sense to understand certain things he shouldn't mess with. That's just the law of the street. So you can't go out there, man, you got to be tough on these. See, you, some of these niggas, this is what you got to do to them. No, you ain't got to do nothing but show them some love. They don't need nobody beating on them no more. They don't need nobody telling them what to do. We can't go into the community, sister, being an absentee dad. We have not been in none of them young men's life at all. So we like the dad that been gone out of this young man's life. All of a sudden, we talking about I'm home, son, and you want to call shots. You don't want to hear that. Man, I ain't seen you in 20 years, man. Don't come up in here telling me what you want me to do. That's the way the brothers in the corner are. Man, ain't nobody been out here trying to save us. Now, all of a sudden, you put a shirt on, you going to come out here for 1 hour, you think you going to save me? Man, you better get on the body, old dude, before I give you a little something. But you got to, love is long-suffering, sister. Love is patient. Love is forgiving. Love is tolerant, man. Love is merciful. You got to be like that with these people. Love is a long time. And if you keep going back, keep going back, keep going back, over 6 months in a year, eventually they're going to know you serious and you're going to win them over.
So, Brother Dennis, have you ever thought about speaking to law enforcement in those communities about the very approach that you have been successful using? Because so many of our people, young and old, are intimidated by law enforcement. So have you ever, you know, incorporated law enforcement into what you're doing and asking them maybe to kind of use your approach? Because we know that when they come into our communities, it's a hostile attitude already, you know, and there's a terrible rapport between young black men in particular and law enforcement. So have you ever incorporated them into what you're doing?
Well, sister, everybody know in the nation that Brother Dennis is a law enforcement sensitivity training. I'm probably one of the most professional law enforcement sensitivity training being non-law enforcement in the country. I've trained over 13 police departments around the country in sensitivity training. The very reason why you see the Honorable Minister Farrakhan move around with the respect of law enforcement is due to most of the work that we have done to create an atmosphere of respect. There's something I've learned about law enforcement, sister, and what I've learned about law enforcement, that they are just as messed up than the community that they serve in. You don't know that law enforcement become affected by the very violence in our community. There's no way you could be a police officer and you work in our community and you see the worst of human behavior. You see a man cut a three-year-old's throat and you show up as a police officer and you're looking at that three-year-old boy with his throat cut and a black man did that. You can't tell me as a police officer that don't affect you. You can't tell me when you can look on national news and you see a man take a 92-year-old black man and hit him in his face 27 times trying to take his car. And you go and you see that black man's face swollen 10 times the size. He's 93 years. You can't tell me as a police officer that don't affect you. You can't tell me you see a three-year-old baby has been molested and abused, and you come and you see some uncle, some babysitter, some boyfriend that did this and try to cover up by setting the kid on fire. You can't tell me as a police officer you're not affected by that. So when you see law enforcement, look at men and women who have become desensitized and affected by the very violence in our community. So they're not no longer a human being. They don't have compassion no more. They don't have love no more. Abuse begets abuse. Most people who are victims of abuse become abusers. So you see the same thing with law enforcement. Come in, they got no love. You have robbed them of their love. And then you got a community that sees this on a daily basis also. How do you think we're affected? So here he's not, so here he's desensitized. Here we're desensitized. Here we don't care no more about human suffering. They don't care nothing about human suffering. So both of us meet in the damn jungle and we beat and rob and kill and mean one another. So both is sick. They sick, we sick. They have a problem with us, we got a problem with them. But if we decide as a people to get our life together, every ethnic community in this country do not depend on the police to protect their women, to protect their children, and to protect their elderly. There is no ethnic group in America that depend on the police to do that. We the only people, sister, that we as men depend on the police to make our community safe. That's crazy. The police are not social workers. They can't solve the social problems of the community, and they didn't create it. So when you call the police, he's not there to understand you. He's not there to be nice to you. He don't know you may want to take his life. He's a police officer. He's the last person you want to see your son see. We want to hope that we can get to your son before the police get to him. We want to be able to say to the police, stay outside the community. Let us work on the inside. And if we can't solve him, if he don't want to get right after we get through with it, then we're going to turn his ass over to you. Excuse my language. Then we're going to turn him over to you. But let us deal with our own kind. And they're waiting. So when I go into a community, I have to work with the law enforcement. I have to tell them about the peacekeepers. I have to share with them we're not carrying no weapons. I have to tell the police we're not trying to be you. We ain't trying to be the police. We're peacekeepers. So we have to create an environment and a relationship of respect. But I'm very careful, sister, that in every city I start a peacekeeper chapter, I'm very careful on aligning the peacekeepers to a brutal police department. If that police department in that city has a history of abusing our people, I do not have no relationship with them, and I don't want no relationship with them. That's a relationship I don't want. But if they sincerely want to solve the problem of crime and violence, then we're going to talk about that. But we also have to talk about they're very frustrated with this no snitch policy. If you listen to most police officers, you know, yeah, that's the only problem I have. In Missouri, right there in Missouri, the attorney general said that he has to do a study because he realized that 60% of most of the shooting victims in the black community do not cooperate with the police or tell the police who shot them. Now, how crazy is that? You got 60% of the people that get shot in our community, but they don't tell the police who shot them. It baffles white people's mind. It baffles the police. Man, somebody just shot you. Didn't you see him? I ain't talking to you. That's crazy. So they say, what is that snow snitch box? But at the same time, sister, white folks have a blue wall of silence. The police don't snitch on one another either. You never see police officers give up other police officers. So if you honestly want us to turn over our criminals, then the police, are you willing to turn over your criminals? I think that's fair exchange. You hand over your crooked cops, we hand over our bad people in our community. Until you do yours, then don't look for us to do ours. That's the bottom line. I think that makes sense. Don't you think that makes sense, sister?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes, sir. Okay. All right, Brother DJ Caesar, before we get into the second part of our show, are there any questions?
Yeah, we got a question from 832-292. Go ahead and ask your question or comment, please.
Yes, comment. Say, bro, right. I love you to death.
Okay, who's speaking, please? What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Milton from H-Town.
Hey, brother from H, that's my hometown, Houston. Go ahead, my brother.
You might not be so excited after you hear me speak, though. Hold up one second. We put the blame everywhere else except on us men. It should be on us men to raise our kids not to do that stupid stuff.
That's right.
Oh, my God. This is Milton Caldwell, better known as Herbie. Hey, baby. Oh, my God.
calling my name out, but check this out, bro. Check this out, bro. We need to focus. Hey, we have 100% focus. We're going to take 50% and put it on the kids. And the other 50% goes on these sorry cats that's not raising these men to be men.
Amen, brother. Come on. You ain't going to get disagreement with me on that one, brother. You know, I was going to get to that part on the second part, but since you know already opened it up, go, brother.
I love what you're saying, but let's stop putting the blame everywhere except in our own house.
Come on now. I'm with you. I'm with you on that one.
All right. Coming from Milton Caldwell, the father of six beautiful daughters. It is so good for you to call in, Milton. Thank you. That has been my friend for over 30 years. Thank you for calling in, sweetheart. Much love to you.
I love you, sister.
Sister Gidget.
Love you, too. Yes, sir.
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum salam. Is that my twin, Brother Rakim?
This is he. This is he. Brother Dennis, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
Yes, Brother Rakim Khalik Muhammad, founder of Nation Building. Brother, I'm enjoying the show, brother. You just on fire. I mean, it's just a blessing to have you on the show tonight.
Yes, it is.
Blessing. And Sister Gidget, you know something? Sister Gidget was kind of worried earlier. She was like, well, we just got Brother Dennis on the show tonight. We don't have nobody else to come on the show tonight. Brother Dennis, I'm going to tell you something. We don't need no damn body else on the show tonight.
Right.
Hey, listen, this is a one-man show by himself. And Sister Gidget, you're doing a wonderful job. DJ Skeezer, you're doing a wonderful job. This show is, I mean, it's on fire. So we are bound to have thousands of listeners tonight. If they don't, we know something is wrong.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Rakim. That's our founder. That's our chief of Nation Building Movement. He's the one that allows me to get on here and do what I do. So thank you, Brother Rakim. You gonna hang out with us for a minute?
Oh, sister, I'm here. You know, so I'm here. I've been, you know, something. I'm just listening to Brother Dennis make me want to just put my flip flops on or my house shoes, just go out in the neighborhood and just start speaking tonight.
Yes, sir, brother. I hear you, soldier.
I'm gonna go out tonight, brother. I'm gonna put a bow tie on in my house coat, brother, and I'm just gonna do the damn thing.
I hear you, soldier.
Wow. Okay, let's see if we got some more questions, because after this we're going to play a song and then we're going to come back and finish up with part two, because it's about time for my phone to go out. Brother DJ Black Caesar, any more questions?
No, not really. You got everybody. There are a lot of people on the line, though, so a lot of people are tuned in tonight.
All praises due to Allah.
I just want to tell Brother Dennis one thing, brother. You on fire, brother. You know what? I'm gonna tell you right now. I know it's gonna sound funny to you, but I didn't know anybody could outtalk Sister Gidget, but you have done it. Hey, I've been sitting there laughing at you, brother, because you got a lot going on, man. You're on top of it. Basically, you're a man of the world, and everybody knows that. If they can't hear you on the phone, they should get off now. But this guy is really on top of it, and I've been posting and checking you out, man. You can do the show by yourself. You don't need Sister Gidget. You don't need nobody to ask you questions.
I got my sister answering all the right questions. She's pushing all the right buttons. I would never respond unless she asked the question.
There's no question,
brother, that I thank Almighty God that, you know, we've been doing this for these many years, so it's not hard, brother, to represent something that you have a passion and a love for.
That's right. Brother Captain Dennis has been in about 40 years. I've been in 46 years. So if you want to blame me for my big mouth, he is part of the responsibility on that. Trust me. I've listened to him many, many years. So that's where I get it from, right there.
I tell you what, brother, do you go around the different places and do you speak at colleges about some of the stuff that goes on in the street? Do you do that? Yes, sir, brother.
I've built a little reputation where people hear me, and man, I mean, they book me, brother. But, you know, it's not hard. Those in the Nation of Islam,
they know Brother Dennis to be. They called me a minister captain. I was the only brother that carried that title in the nation under the ministers to be able to know that you could carry two hats. So they would always
right.
say, well, you know, he said he's a captain, but he's a minister. Well, you know, I've been walking with the baddest minister. How can I walk with a man for 33 years, the best speaker, the best motivator, the best articulator of truth, and the best representative I know of God to this day, and walk with him, be with him, and then don't open up my mouth, have nothing to say? That's crazy.
Exactly.
Man.
That's what I'm talking about, brother.
Okay,
Brother
DJ Caesar, go ahead and play us a song. We're going to come back and finish part two. We have a lot more to talk to Brother Dennis about, so let's give him a break. Let him get some water or something down his throat, because now we really tend to get into the meat of this, Brother Dennis. I hope you're ready for the ride.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. I'm ready, Sister Gidget.
Yes, sir.
Old pirate Jesse Rabbi sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hands was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. Redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. Our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them are gonna stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you hear to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption songs. All I ever had, redemption songs. These songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
Okay, guys, that was Bob Marley, Redemption Song. All right, Sister Gidget, take it away, baby.
All right, we're going to get into part two, Brother Captain. Are you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You know, my good friend Milton Caldwell from Houston, Milton, when I come to Houston, you owe me dinner, man. He brought up a good point about, you know, the position of the man, and I really wasn't going to get to that yet, but since he's put it out there on the table, I want to know, you know, within your initiative, because I know you don't want to call it an organization, so within your initiative, what about male mentoring for our young men out there? Is that part of what you're bringing as well? And are the peacekeepers local? I mean, I know you've established different chapters, but, you know, is it something that you try to set up in each city for the purpose of consistency with the initiative?
Well, to the first question, and I love brother, and of course, he went right down that vein. The men that we call to the Peacekeepers Global Initiative, we ask for the men. And why the men? It's because we believe it is the man's moral obligation to protect the women and children and elderly of the community. Let me say this, to add to what my brother said, and I'm glad he came back and reminded me. The Honorable Minister Farrakhan used these words. He said this. He said, children will do what is natural until you teach them what is normal. I'm going to say that again. Children will do what is natural until you teach them what is normal. Now, it's natural that if I go to school, but I'm afraid because I'm going to be bullied, I'm afraid because I'm going to be intimidated to be a part of a gang, it is natural for me to click up with other people for strength and protection that we call gangs. That is natural, but it's not normal to live that way. Now, the word normal comes from the root word norms. Now, look at this. Normal comes from the root word norms. Now, the word norms mean established rules of conduct and behavior. Now, the question we have to ask ourselves, do we have norms in our community? Do the black community have established rules of conduct and behavior? We have to say no. There is no established rules of conduct and behavior that has been established by us. Now, here's where we're going with what brother said. Do you know, sister, that coming out of the East, it has always been the men who established the norms in the village. It has always been the men who established the norms in the home. It has always been the men who established the rules of conduct and behavior. It was my father who established the rules of conduct and behavior in the house. It wasn't my mother. My father was the one who said, boy, if you didn't put nothing in the refrigerator, you don't take nothing out of the refrigerator. It was my father that told me, you only got two things you're going to do in this house. You're either going to go to school or you're going to go to work. It was my father that said, you better be home when the street lights come on. It was my father. So if the man is the one who established the rules of conduct and behavior, then have we went out there and told them young brothers or asked and established to them young brothers rules of conduct and behavior? Have we ever told them young brothers on the corner what is acceptable behavior and what is unacceptable behavior? Have we ever said, brothers, unacceptable behavior that you refer to women as bees? It's unacceptable behavior that you take in violating disrespect to elderly. That's unacceptable behavior. We have never established that in our community. So when he said the men, yes, the men have failed in their responsibility. We have failed in our responsibility to provide a community for our women so that you as women can raise your children free of molestation, free of crime, free of violence. We as men have failed to give you the proper environment to do this. So I love what brother said, because I'm a command. See, my profession, my occupation, sister, I'm
I've been in for 33 years. I'm a repaired man. Every FOI is a repaired man. So we are repair men. I repair men. So when we go out there, we try to repair these men. We try to make these men functional. Because when something is out of order, and our community, sister, is out of order, right? When something is out of order, if you go to a pop machine and you see a sign that's out of order, it's saying that this machine is broke. This machine is non-functioning. This machine is not working. Now, look at this. Our community, the black man, is broke. He's non-functioning, and he ain't working. So somebody got to put him back in service. So he needs to be repaired. Once you repair the black man, then you make him functioning. Then you make him in order. When something is in order, it's in harmony. When something's in order, it's at peace. So we have to establish that. So it is the men to establish the rules of conduct and behavior. But if 70% of the homes don't have a man in it, then who is establishing the rules of conduct and behavior? Well, the women. Well, the women must not be doing a great job. She can't be doing a great job because every one of them young brothers that's out there shooting and killing and looting, the majority of them coming from a single-parent home, the majority coming from a home where there's a male-female figure. So she cannot be the man even though she tried. I'll tip my hat off to every single mother who have the awesome task of raising children without a male figure in their life or without a husband, without a man to help them. I tip my hat. They're not saying that a single-parent mother can't do a great job. I don't even take it that way. But what I am saying, that if you take my arm from me, and I got two arms, but you take away one of my arms, you make me what you call a handicap. Handicap means to be at a disadvantage. Handicap means to be non-functioning in one area. Well, if you take away the man out of the home and God made the man and the woman to be a mate, then you're making the woman a handicap. Then if the man ain't got a woman, then he's a handicap. How can you put a handicapped man among people that's not handicapped and expect him to function 100%? How can the society expect us as a people to function 100%? We are handicapped people. We're trying to solve our problems and not recognize that we are solving our problems from a handicapped position. When the man and the woman gets back together, then you begin to start seeing a whole family, and we can establish the rules of conduct and behavior. Now, on that last note, sister, we have to understand that even though the man is being held responsible for not fulfilling his requirement and duty as a man to maintain and provide and respect and protect the women, children, and elderly in the community. However, we have women who are peacekeepers, and we do not stop our women from going out there to patrol with the brothers. Why? Because we're no longer going to be divided that she stays here and we over here. No, 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 no. Listen to me. If we're going to go up, we're going to go up together. If we're going to go down, doggone it, we're going to go down together. But one thing we can no longer be is divided. So the man and the woman have to work together to solve this problem. She needs us. We need her. We need each other. And that's the way we're going to solve it. To play this macho where we got to be in the back. Listen, God did not create the woman to walk behind us. He did not create the woman to walk in front of us. He created the woman to walk beside us. And that's what's so important for us in the Nation of Islam. The minister has always been a man to say a nation can rise no higher than his woman. But it has always been a man's duty to provide the kind of security and environment so she can give back to us children that would glorify us, children that would create an environment and build an environment. But on the other hand, look what we're getting. So we're not going to do the blame game. But I'm going to have to give the man, I have to lay it right there. I'm not giving the man a pass. I like what brother said. I'm not giving the man a pass. And lastly, these brothers is coming out to join. Now, you go to join, you went there because you robbed, lame, maintained, and killed, and loot too. I don't know what you there for. You broke white folks' law, and you did white folks' time. But we never had you to do time to the community for the community that you tore up. We never held any of the men that left the community in the shape it's in accountable for the condition they left it in. So when they come back out of the jails, you got to do some community time now. You did white folks' time. Now you got to come back into the very community you tore up, the very community you so dope in, the very community you took loot and shoot in. You got to come back and clean up the very community that you left. And we got to hold these brothers accountable, and I'm not giving no grown man a pass, not one. If my leader, 79, be 80, can go and walk the worst streets of Chicago, go into the streets of Chicago, 79, be 80 next year, then let me tell you something, man, I'm not giving nobody a pass, nobody. I'm passionate about that, sister. Y'all still there?
Let me see.
Yes, sir.
Well, it got real quiet, man. I thought I got cut off, brother.
Oh, no, brother. You're still going. You're still going, black man. You're still going.
Sister,
I know.
Are you there? Hold on for a minute, man. Let me see. Sister Gidget, turn your phone off mute if you got your phone on mute, please. Okay. Let me see what's up with her, because she's still online. I don't know what's up, but she has phone issues. You guys go ahead and talk, and I'll call her up on another line.
Brother Dennis,
okay.
Keep doing it. I'm here with you, brother. Keep doing it.
Brother, I mean, I just kind of feel very strong that, you know, we're going to have to, as men, put aside all of our egos, put aside all of our isms. The beautiful thing, what I said to my dear sister, is that I didn't want it to be an organization. I want the peacekeepers to be an action plan, an initiative that any organization can adapt. So if you're a Christian church and you say, hey, man, we want the peacekeepers initiative in our church, then you can get it. If you're a Muslim, we say, we want the peacekeepers initiative in our minds. If you're a nationalist, if you're gay, if you're white, if you whatever you want to do, if you're about peace, and you want to see peace in your community, then, man, they ain't got nothing to do with what you are and what you profess. Peace is God, and God is peace. That's why our religion is called Islam, which means peace and submission to the will of God. And so we have to understand, man, that, you know, let me tell you, a great lady, when I was over in the U.K., oh, man, God, bless our sister over in the U.K., she's an older Jamaican woman, and she's, you know, if you ever heard a Jamaican accent slash with a British accent, then that's a dialect right there. And
oh, yes,
I'll never forget, she said to me, she said, Brother Mohammed, she said, there's an old African proverb about a boy that fell in the well. And she said, so many people of the village came with a rope to pull the boy out, and everybody tried their rope, and everybody's rope was too short. And after 6 to 7 attempts, the boy hollered out the well, said, why don't y'all tie y'all's ropes together? And this seems to be something that was so simple that the boy had to tell the grown-ups. Mm. And this is what has happened, brother. Yes, the Muslims' rope has fallen short to save our people. Yes, the Christian rope has fallen short to save our people. Yes, the Baptists, the political, the Republicans, the Democrats, the old school, the new school, all our ropes have fallen short to save our youth. Well, why don't we now tie our ropes together? And if we tie our ropes together, it would be long enough to save them. But to tie them together means you have to put aside your ego. You have to put aside your vanity for the good of the whole of humanity. Something that simple that sister said to me has so much profound effect, and there's hardly a place I speak where I don't even that I mention that. I mention it everywhere I speak because I let the people know in the audience, come on, y'all, ain't nobody got the solution, the total solution. But if we tie our ropes together, look at what we can accomplish. And that's what we do. So 98% of the peacekeepers, they're not Muslims. 98% of the peacekeepers are non-Muslims, even though I'm a Muslim. But, you know, man, everybody's not going to be a Muslim. Everybody's not going to join the church. But everybody could be a peacekeeper. Because the peacekeeper don't require you to give up nothing. All the peacekeepers require you to do is to be present for peace for 1 hour. What your lifestyle is your lifestyle. Now, we hope that being around good God-fearing people, that it would eventually rub off on you and you eventually want to become a Muslim or you eventually want to become a good Christian. We hope to accomplish that, and we have. But our objective is, man, let's just be a peacekeeper.
Okay. Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
we hear you well.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm back. I guess they through playing with me now.
All right, we're glad you're back.
Thank
you, federal government, for giving it back to us. He just had to let you know they still listening.
Yeah, we
he just
think,
had to
we
let
think.
You know they still listening.
I only heard bits and pieces of what you said. I have to go back in the archives and play it back. And I know we were talking about the men, and I heard that you're not giving no man a pass. I think that's when I blanked out again. However, okay, I don't know where you end up, but talking about when we talk about the position of the man and we talk about making our community safe, you know, it's no secret that 90%, yeah, I think it's 90% of the crimes committed in the black community, person to person, especially, is perpetrated by the black man, so to say. So how can black men police our communities? Because, you know, we still have rapists. You know, like you said, we have child molesters. We have people that are breaking into cars, breaking into homes, violating us in so many different ways. So how does an unarmed man or group of men start to police our own communities?
That's a good question, sister. And every peacekeeper man goes to a sex registered background check. We don't run no 50 on him. We're not concerned whether he was in jail or he had a felony or whatever. We're not trying to get, but we don't want to have in our midst pedophiles. We don't want to have in our midst sex offenders. Now, we're not judging nobody on what they are and what they do, but because the peacekeepers work in the schools, we can't have these kind of men. So we ask every man's permission that we run a national check on them to see if they are on the sex offenders list. If they're on the sex offenders list, then we have to say, I'm sorry, brother. I mean, we don't know what your circumstance, whether you're guilty or you're innocent, but we cannot have you as a peacekeeper. Because of what we do, we don't never want to be able to have that you or anyone who has that kind of jacket around us and children. I mean, it's not judging you, but that's just the policy. Now, you know, we're not running no 50 on a man to see if he a drug dealer. I mean, no, because ain't none of us no angels. But the bottom line is, if you have a desire to do good, and this is the good thing about the peacekeepers. Every one of the peacekeepers come out of the community. Everybody in the community know one another. If there's somebody that becomes a peacekeeper and he got a jacket of beating women, then we had a situation, sister. We had a situation in Mount Vernon, New York. And the brothers was out there. It was about 60 brothers out there doing their 1 hour power. And a sister pulled up in the car and she said, "No, you ain't. I know you ain't got that nigga no peacekeeper." After that, nigga done bust me in my eye last night. Excuse my language. That's what she said. You know, and we looked at brother, you know, and she, And I said, brother, you know, we sorry, man. We can't have you rolling with us, man. You know, but she got, no, brother, you got to give us your shirt, turn in your ID. No, sir. You know, so, you know, the community going to call you out. If there's something about you that you're perpetrating, I don't have to find out about that. somebody in the community going to bust you out. You know, so we ain't trying to be all of that, but we do want to make sure that the people that put on that orange shirt that we put out there in the community can be a halfway decent example. We're not perfect. We got issues. But every peacekeeper goes through a training, and the training don't stop because we now begin to have respect and we meet one another as men for the first time. We meet together on Tuesday nights, not doing nothing about peacekeeping, but we talk about issues as men. We talk about how to address the child support law, how to deal with certain issues as men, dealing with as stepchildren and your baby mama drama. We talk about that because we do as men have issues. And at the same time, we have the women peacekeepers talking to the women because y'all got some issues. So, but if we can get in the room and talk about privately how to solve these issues, then we could become better servants to the people and better human beings to the world, better fathers to our sons, better husbands to our wives, better sons to our mothers.
Yes, sir. Okay. Can everybody hear me okay?
Oh, yes, yeah, we hear you well.
Okay, all right, it just seemed like I got some dead silence. Okay, so brother Dennis, you know, I'm listening to you, and you know, I'm a visionary, so I'm getting visions in my head as we're speaking, and you know, I'm thinking about the gathering, you know, of the people, because I think in order for us to really get back to the basics in our own communities, there's a need for the gathering of the people because there's a gap there. And like I said, you know, about the young man on the corner with the sagging pants, you know, there seems to be, you know, an avoidance from our senior citizens, from those individuals. And then we don't include our elders, you know, we don't include them, or we don't go to them and have them advise us, or, you know, they're not speaking to the young mothers, and the older men are not speaking to the young men. And so there has to be a gathering in order to reconstruct the black family. So how do we do that?
Well, you know, sister, we can't talk at our children. We can't talk at them. We have to talk to them. We can't talk down on them. We have to talk up to them. See, our children don't see this generation as a generation fit to obey. They don't see our generation as a generation fit to listen to. When I grew up, we came under the law from my parents: do as I say and not as I do. Our mothers would send us, our fathers would send us to the store to buy them a pack of cigarettes and tell us, don't let me catch you smoking. You see? So we you know, that's the way we grew up. But this ain't this generation. This generation, they call this not the X generation, the Y generation. The reason why they call it the Y generation is because this generation has the audacity to ask the question, why? If we say, don't let me catch you smoking, they ain't going to say, okay. They're going to say, why? You doing it? Don't let me catch you drinking. They're not going to say, okay. They're going to say, why? You drinking? See, this is not a do as I say, not as I do generation. And I love that because it's not until you ask the question why that you learn. Every one of our lessons that we're taught in the Nation of Islam starts off with the question why. Damn, that means that why is the beginning of learning. So if you get mad because our children want to know why and you ain't got a good answer, then don't expect them to listen to you. You see? So I understand there's a gap. But there's a gap because our young people are not trying to do the old way. The old way ain't working. They can't go out there and march and take billy clubs and fire hose and it's just go along to get along, young man. You got know how to laugh when ain't nothing funny. This is how you get along with them. They ain't that kind of generation. Man, no, book that. And I'm not scratching when I don't itch. And so we have to learn to respect that they're a generation that is born for change. So God ain't going to let us influence them. And look at the damn sorry-ass condition we in as elder people. We don't own nothing. We don't run nothing. So what is we going to give them but nothing? So why nothing from nothing leaves nothing? So you can't get mad at them. But we do have to make our elders understand you can't talk at them. You got to talk to them. You can't talk down on them. You better talk up to them. That's just the way it is. So we need this kind of dialogue so that we can establish the respect level that some of the seniors don't have for the young, and we got to establish the respect level that the young don't have for the elders. So it's a work in progress. I mean, but to do nothing is not an option. We have to do it.
Yes, sir. So are you having, in these communities, are you having town hall meetings that are inclusive of elders that are willing to participate as well as men and children?
Well, sister, I can't do it all. I don't try to
yes,
be
sir.
Everything. I stick to what I know. I deal with the peacekeepers. I leave all of the social scientists to do that town hall meeting stuff. I'm not one to bring a bunch of people and then you give them a microphone and they don't want to talk about how to solve the problem. They want to be able to give you their opinion. We spend 98% of the time in any town hall meetings listening to people give you their opinion. This is what I think. This is what I think the problem is. Man, we don't got time to listen to what everybody thinks the problem is. Do you have a solution? And if you do, is it working? Well, no, I don't. Then sit down next. We ain't got time to keep going over the same old, man. You get people to get on this line, and they ain't going to say, ask the question. They want to make a statement.
Well, like what the brother said, I think the problem is we need to get more people voting. That's the problem.
Man, come on.
I'm going to give you the real. This is the real solution of the problem. See, the real solution of the problem is the black woman. Here's the real problem. The real problem is these kids need education. Here's the real problem.
And we be there all day long, and nobody's wrong. Nobody's wrong. But the question
right.
is, if we have to pick one of them to be the priority, which one do we need to be the priority? We can't take a deal with all of them. We have to pick one at a time. And that's where we fall out. Which one is the priority? Some say education, some say jobs. If you're an educator, you say education. If you're a man to believe and you ain't got no job, you say a job is priority. If you're homeless, hell, the homeless going to say having a house over my head is a priority. If you're hungry, somebody going to say, man, eating is a priority. So the question is, We've been down this, and it becomes frustrating. That's why people don't want to come to meetings. That's why people are tired of town hall meetings. That's why people are tired of summits. That's why people are tired of conferences. They don't accomplish nothing. We get in there, and all of the scholars want to just, you know, talk about all that they know. People don't care what you know. People want to know that you care.
That's right. That's right. Okay, well, Brother Dennis, I want to speak to this because I want to go back to, I know, you know, you mentioned earlier about single mothers, and I want to go back to that particular issue because, you know, we have to be accountable. We have to be found showing responsible media in our households. Okay, I'm getting some interference. What is that? Please put your phones on mute if you're not talking.
Why are you putting that shit?
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, we hear. Hey, Sister Gidget, I got a question from somebody. Can I ask a question now?
Okay, wait a minute. Is Brother Dennis on the phone?
Yeah, I'm still on.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, sir. Okay, go ahead.
318, go ahead and ask your question and make your comment, please. 318 error code.
Yes, assalamu alaikum, Brother Dennis. My name is Brother Brian. I'm calling Alexandria, Pineville, Louisiana, and I would just like to find out how can someone get you to their city to speak, to give some advice or basically to speak in that city.
Well, what you can do is if you would like my email address. My email address is Enota Project. It is Enota Project, Project, at AOL.com. The Enota is a tone spelled backwards. That's all it is. It's Enota Project at AOL.com. Or you can go to the website, which is www.thepeacekeepers.org. That's thepeacekeepers.org. And their information that you can get a hold of me, I'm on Facebook, Dennis Muhammad. I'm on Twitter, at Captain Muhammad. And I'll be honored, I'll be happy to come to anybody's city to get such a great initiative started in your city.
And for those of us who don't know, what city are you out of currently?
I'm out of Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Okay, so do we have any other questions, Caesar?
Yes, hold on 1 second. Let me open up the phone line. I don't know. This number right here is basically somebody has the number blocked. You
yes,
have a question,
me.
Please?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi,
is that Michelle?
Hi, this is Justice Barassa. I just want to say I love this. I think this is awesome. Just wonderful. I'm just
Thank
here
you,
listening.
Sister.
Thank you. I have so much to say. I like to have them on my show because we think alike. But I do want to say one thing. I think one of the things that has happened is our parents, our children are not being taught spirituality at a young age, whether it be
right.
Christian, Muslim, whatever. They're not teaching them the basics. So I just want to say that. But anyway, thank you for allowing me to listen. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you,
thank
sister,
you,
for
sister.
Calling
You're
in.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, sister.
Okay, Caesar, any more?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, so, Brother Captain Dennis, I want to talk about responsible media because as a single parent, I was single for a little while as a parent, but even when I wasn't single, you know, we made it a point, you know, my poor children, I don't think they watched TV till they was like 19 years of age. Because there was always something to do. They were in martial arts. They were in the mosque. They were in the Sheikh Community Center. They were in the Black History Research Program, and they did the Civil Rights Tour. You know, they were always busy. But in these days and times, you know, how we are portrayed in the media, I believe, has a very profound effect on the psyche of young children in particular, and then, like you said, it becomes the norm, so to speak. And a lot of people, you know, they say, well, you know, you can't be influenced by television, this, that, and the other. But you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that one day we will invite the devil into our living room. And so, you know, at some point, somebody has to speak to responsible media or just turn it off and create activities in the community and have activities in the home that is exclusive of the media. And I just want to get your take on how you think the media in the last 25 years has impacted our community and the thinking of the children.
Well, sister, media hell have impacted us. When you
yes,
talk
sir.
About do you talk about the television, imagine the television with like a tree with roots reaching outside the screen and attaching itself to every facet of that home. Rather, it's attaching itself to the cell phone, it's attaching itself to the computer, it's attaching itself to social networks. I mean, it is now the controlling power of intellectual thought. And for us to act like how many of us cannot go a day without our cell phone? I mean, I go into the airport, and it's unbelievable if you look around and see everybody looking at a screen on their phone. Everybody text messaging, everybody tweeting, everybody reading the tweets, everybody Facebooking. There is no more communication in the home when you talk in the video. Your daughter can go in the room and not ever come out. Your son can go in the room and not ever come out. There is the, shoot, you're talking about just us. It has destroyed the whole family structure. And I want to say this about the influence and the power of our women. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, the home is the woman's base, but it's not necessarily her place.
Her place, that's right.
And when you begin to look at all of these young boys that's out there shooting, killing. Now, I'm about ready to say, hey, we need to take any mother who has a child living in your home from 18 years on down, if he's living in your home 18 years on down, and if he commits any acts of violence, then when we put the handcuffs on him, we put the handcuffs on you. When he gets sentenced, you get sentenced. See, it's got to be co-conspirator now. We can't act like you innocent. We can't act like you don't know he got guns. We can't act like you know he ain't selling dope. We can't act like you know he don't belong to no gang. So, sister, your son coming out of your household killing other people, innocent people's children, then doggone it, you get the time with him. I bet you if we execute that kind of law, you'll be hearing black mamas calling for, man, you better come and get this boy. I can't go to jail. No, I'm not going to jail for you, boy. He got a gun, and I mean, please, come and get you. I can't, please. They're going to kick me out such a, get this, boy. See, then we don't have to worry about him being harbored. That's what we need to do. I guarantee you, everything starts changing in the hood. But most of these mamas know these boys out there foul. They can't let, you can't tell me you don't know your son is foul. And you keep him, but Your Honor, he's a good boy. You don't understand. Ma'am, look here. He going to jail, and you going to jail. I'm sorry. That's the way it is. Fifth case dismissed. And that would send a shock throughout the community, and I guarantee you, mamas would be kicking him out there. I said, no, no. You're not doing that in here, boy. I can't, look, I'm 30, I'm 40. I can't go to jail. I'm sorry. And I guarantee you, there'll be a damn change in the community.
Okay, now wait a minute, Brother Captain Dennis, because I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Hold on. Hold on. Because there are two issues here. Now, you know just as well as I know that if the mother is in the home, you know, more than likely she's the breadwinner as well, if she's the only one there. And part of the reason why I kept my children busy thereafter my divorce is because, like I said, I can't watch you and feed you too. So I had to be responsible in making sure that the environment that they were in was a positive one while I was away. The second thing about that is the reduction of services in the community. And I'm asking you from a standpoint of a single mother who has to be the breadwinner in that household, what does she do with little Abdul after 3 o'clock and she got to be at work till 6 o'clock? What is he to do? Where is he to go to stop the influences that he could be exposed to just in that frame of time that the mother is away and really not being able to provide primary care to that child?
Okay, well, listen, now there are some exceptions to every rule. I mean, you know, this is Mrs. Goodson Dallas. Everybody knows she's a good woman. She works hard, and she just got a disrespectful son, and the judge take that into consideration. I'm not talking about her. I'm talking about these young mamas out here who's trying to be friends to their daughters. I'm talking about these young mamas who love to see their son sagging with white beaters on. They think that's cute. They braiding their hair. That's who I'm talking about. I'm talking about, sister, you know, see, let me tell you about if when I went to school and if my mama had to come to school for me, She walking through the door with a house coat on, and head with rollers on, with slippers, and somebody's like, uh-oh. You know, and man, listen, no. All the teacher had to do was to say, don't let me call your mama. I'm straight. Well, it ain't so much that the mothers want to all go to jail, but the kids going to start thinking about that. Man, I can't have my, man, my mama killed me before they come. Oh, no. So they're straightened up on their own. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that, you know, the mama just said, no, the kids don't want to have their mama in that situation. So they would think twice before they get themselves involved. Let me tell you a true story. In London, England, the lady told me this story, how the police kicked in this woman's door. 3 o'clock in the morning in London, England, when they kicked in the door, they were like the jump out boys. They had the mask on, I mean the mask on, or they called the skull caps hiding their face. And they grabbed, she opened up the door, she was in her night clothes. When she opened the door, they kicked the door in, they threw her down, handcuffed her. They ran upstairs, he said, what is her? He said, he's upstairs trying to get rid of the dope. The police catch him. She said, he ain't did nothing. Hey, my boy's a good. When she brought him down, they brought him down in the handcuffs with bags of dope. When he comes down the steps, he noticed that his mama's dress, her night skirt, was pulled up on her back and her underwear was showing. And all these white police officers standing there while his mama's butt is out. So he got handcuffs. He's talking about, hey, man, cover my mama up. Man, put my mama's dress down. You know what the police officer said? The police officer looked at the boy and said, you brought that on your mama. See? Now, can you imagine him going to jail with that on his mind, with these cops standing around with these guns? You can't see their face in his mama's drawers is showing? And then he got the nerve to tell put, no, you brought that on your mama. And if the mama didn't know that this boy was selling dope, then she should have been more involved in watching him. And if she didn't know, then that's the price she paid. Some of these mamas know what these boys are doing. And they running up in these houses and they robbing the dope boy, killing everybody in the family. They kidnapping family members, innocent people getting killed. Because we're not checking our young people, and the parents is condoning this. The mamas know about some of them. Some of them don't. And the man, we can't charge the man to the game. He ain't in the house no how. He in jail. He already being punished. He goes to court for child support. He gets go to jail. They take away his driver's license. He can't take care of child. So they figure you punish him by putting him in jail like he going to get money while he in jail. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yes, sir. Okay, Brother Captain. All right. I want to talk about reaching across the aisle because I know, throughout my sojourn, you know, we've always had those people in the community that are very fickle about Muslims, and, you know, it's always been an image portrayed as though we are anti-Christian, we anti-Jew, we anti-everything. And, of course, we know that that is incorrect. So do you incorporate pastors, ministers, rabbis, priests, black politicians, local politicians, in peacekeepers, or do you even ask them to join you on, you know, while you're in these different cities promoting the initiative and getting initiatives started in these places and keeping it going, you know, are they inclusive in that? Because, you know, we only have in this town, West Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and so, you know, those who call themselves leaders that are really activists or whatever, are we incorporating those people in peacekeepers?
Well, there's no question, sister. We're not going nowhere without the black church. The black church is the oldest institution that we got in our community. And I mean, for us to act like the preacher ain't got no influence is crazy. What we have to do is begin to hold the church to the tenets of what they say they believe. That's all. And once we do that, they understand
That's why you came out of Matthew's talking about blessed are the peacekeepers, for they shall be called the children of God. You know,
uh-huh.
This is the work that Jesus, we peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers. They're called the church. We're peacemakers. So we have to incorporate the church. It is the influence. There are many, many great preachers, and there are some preachers out there I wouldn't give 2 cents about. But let me say this. The people are waking up. Minister Farrakhan have set the atmosphere on fire with truth. These preachers got to come bring it. They go on YouTube and get Minister Farrakhan's lecture and make it their lecture. That's the only way they could keep the people. But the bottom line is, we recognize, sister, that the church, look here, in Paterson, New Jersey, they have over 300 churches in Paterson, New Jersey. Guess how many black businesses they have? They got 20 black businesses. 300 churches, 20 black businesses. And guess what? You can pretty much name those businesses. You can almost name those businesses. I think I may add too many on them. But the bottom line is, we got more churches per square business than we got more churches per square block than businesses. Jewish people got more business per square block than synagogues. Something's wrong with that picture. How is it that we can have so many churches but so much crime? In an area, man, a small town like Paterson, New Jersey, can you imagine if those 300 churches tell each take 10 men out of their church? Say the 300 churches and the preachers say to every one of those churches, hey, I need 10 men, Reverend, out of your church. Just give me 10. Give me 10 of your men out of the church times 300. You do the math. Then we put those 3,000 men in the street. Oh, my God. We just solved crime. If we just get 10 men out of each church that could be committed to 1 hour, we could change this thing. And Minister Farrakhan has called all of the men of the Nation of Islam out of the mosque. He have called his congregation out of the mosque. He have called the members under his leadership, the male members, out of the mosque and hit the streets like, and he's leading us. Well, why don't the preachers do the same thing that Farrakhan doing? Call the men of your church out the church and you lead them into the street. If every church do that, we will win. We will win. People are tired of people keep preaching the word of God, but they're not practicing the word of God. We need action. And that's why, sister, in the last book of the four gospels, after the four gospels, come the book of Acts. Look at the word, Acts. Why was it called the books of Acts? Because it wasn't until Jesus left that his disciples act on the word that he gave them. It wasn't until they put the word that Jesus gave them into action that they seen the power of that word. That's why the word action, acts, A-C-T. Only thing that's missing with the word act is the word I, which is yourself, and on. It ain't till we take the truth of God, I, and act on it. When you act on the word of God, you're putting it in action. And action means accepting the challenge to improve your neighborhood, accepting the challenge to improve your nation. That's what action means. And until they act on the word of God, that the disciples see the power of that word. And that's why it's called the books of Acts. We got to act on the word of Jesus. We can't talk about it. We got to be about it. Is y'all still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, we lost Sister Gidget. Let me call her right back. Hold on for a second. Let me get on the phone. Yeah, okay.
Keep going, Brother Dennis. Keep going. Hey, listen. You, like I said, you're a one-man show. We got to keep it going, brother. Keep it going.
Brother, I'm telling you, man, I'm having a wonderful time, man.
We're having a wonderful time too, brother.
Man, y'all have given me 2 hours to cut loose, man. That's uninterrupted, man.
Do you want?
I was on the line. I was trying to tell Caesar to open my mic, but I heard you, Brother Captain.
Okay, take this off, Brother Captain. Let me ask you a question, Brother Captain. I'm asking you a question. Do you want 2 more hours next week? Do you want that?
Brother, I mean, listen, man. Listen, man, let me say this. I would be honored any time you ask me to come on. I would love it. I'm telling you, I would love to have more people to ask questions. That's how I'm motivated. So if you promise me that you'll have the people asking more questions and me talking, then that stimulates me more because there's so many other subjects that we definitely have to address. But I thank you so much for giving me this great opportunity. We have been on everything dealing with a male and female relationship. This particular subject is dear to me, crime and violence. That's my forte. But I'm not just limited in the area. I want to talk about law enforcement. I want to talk about sensitivity training. I want to talk, are black police officers really relevant in the black community? I want to talk about all that.
Well, Brother Captain, we have a show that I produce called The Real FOI that comes on every Tuesday. So, you know, you're welcome. You know, you family, so you're welcome. Because, you know, nobody can come on this show and be on here one time and go away. That ain't how we roll around here. So,
oh, no.
You know,
not at all.
Once you get in, you family, you stuck. You know, you like kidnapped. You know, you trapped. So you can't just disappear, Brother Captain. Okay?
Brother Captain, listen. I'm going to tell you something. I only got one complaint, brother. I just tried to, and I'm going to get your permission right now. I just tried to add you to Nation Building, but I could not do it because it said I wasn't allowed to or whatever it was. But, brother, when you get a chance to go to Facebook, please request your membership in Nation Building. We will be so happy to have you in the post, whatever. I mean, we will have your own show on Nation Building. You keep on talking, brother.
Well, brother, I'm so honored. I thank you so, so much. I don't know who's listening, how many people listen. I did post it on my Facebook. I think some of the people who are on my Facebook, they may be on. I'm getting a lot of tweets to me talking about, man, teach, oh, God, blah, blah, blah. So there are some people who can't, but they're posting it on Facebook, listening to this right now. And I'm just so honored and thankful to Almighty God Allah for allowing me to walk with Minister Farrakhan, who's given me this great gift that I've got, and that's ability to communicate. I don't know nobody who's a greater communicator than Minister Farrakhan. And to be walking in that man's shadow for 33 years, you can definitely see it had rubbed off on me. You know, I said to the minister one time, I said, you know, Brother Minister, all this time I thought I was protecting you, and little did I know, you really was protecting me. And he laughed and smiled. And because that's the truth.
That's right.
I'm sitting there thinking, I'm protecting him, and really, he was protecting me. I thank God for such a wonderful human being who I love from the bottom of my heart. And all I tried to do is to make my father pleased with my representation of the teachings. And I don't want to have ever be on the wrong side of him. I always want to be on the right side of him. And I believe that the best way I told the minister one time, I said, Brother Minister, I'm not trying to be a bad student by not calling you all the time and asking your permission. I said, but, sir, I just believe I can show you better than I can tell you. And he laughed, and he said, well, you know, that's what Dr. Shabazz told the scientists. He could show them better. He could tell them, but he was perceived as a rebel. So I said, yes, sir, but all rebels are sometimes revolutionaries because if it wasn't for Dr. Shabazz, we wouldn't be the people we are. So every time somebody wants to show their father like a good child, you always want to show and make your parents proud of you. I try to do that. I love my nation. And every believer in the Nation of Islam know I am the protector of our women. They know Brother Dennis would go in the hell with a gasoline jacket to defend our women in the nation. I've trained many brothers in the nation. And I have much love for the fruit of Islam. And every believer has been so kind to me. And I thank God that I have such friends. We have a brother who is a former captain. He's dying with stage 4 cancer. His name is Sadiq. I've asked the believers to help me to send a little something to his family. He's battling it, but he looks good. I believe he have overcome it, but I just got word he had a little setback yesterday. But if Allah choose that he give him a few more days, months, years, or hours, we still as Muslims have an obligation to come to the aid of him and his family. So whatever believer can give as a donation, go on my Facebook. I don't care if it's $1, $10. It beats a blank. It's more than what he got. Let us be the good people that we are, because we never know when we're going to need some help. And that's all. And I thank the warm prayers that they've given to our brother, because he was one of also the security of Brother Farrakhan. He also have made great contribution to the rise of the Nation of Islam. And we always have to show and give credit when credit is due. Brother Dennis has always been one who comes to the aid of the believers. I like that God has given me that kind of heart, because I know, man, that one day we're not going to have one another. So it's best to show love right now before we're not going to be able to do that. So I hope that I live by that principle and hope to be an example of the principle of being a good Muslim. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, a good Muslim is a good Christian, and a good Christian is a good Muslim.
Yes, sir. Brother Captain Dennis, I cannot thank you enough for being on the show tonight. Of course, like I say, please come back. We will talk in the future about you being back. I am just more than honored, and you are such a joy, and you teaching hard tonight, and I know they want you back by popular demand, and I just can't thank you enough. So thank you, sir. Original salute to you and all the work that you're doing, not only in the Peacekeepers, but in the nation itself, and for all that you have done over the years. I just can't thank Allah enough for you. I've been watching you for years and years and years, and you are truly a repair man. I can bear witness. So thank you. That's the end of our show. I want to thank all the callers that called in. And I do have a large listening audience, but they are the shyest, quietest audience you ever want to hear. And oftentimes they say they don't answer questions because we answer them already. So, you know, all praise is due to Allah. So, Brother Captain Dennis will be back. Yes, sir.
Can I do something unpredictable real quick, sister? I know you're the director of protocol and public relations, but can I do something unpredictable?
Unpredictable. We only got like a matter of seconds, and we're really over.
Okay,
so go
ahead. Brother Dennis, next Thursday, come back. Next Thursday, whatever you want to talk about, brother, you and Sister Gidget, talk about it next Thursday. We would love to hear from you, brother.
I will be back, inshallah, next Thursday. Thank you. I love you. My name is Dennis Muhammad, and I am present for peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Alaikum salam.
Thank you, Nation Building. Thank you, Brother DJ Black Caesar. Thank you, Brother Rakim, for timing in. I will give a list of the shows, but we're out of time, so I leave you as I came in peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Peace.